coming out of his place, and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. Then the mountains will melt under him, and the valleys will burst open, like wax near the fire, like waters poured down a steep place. All this is for the transgression of Jacob, and for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? And what is the high place of Judah? Is it not Jerusalem? And Micah 5:2-5. But you, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, you who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin is from of old, from ancient days. Therefore, he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has brought forth. Then the rest of his kindred shall return to the people of Israel, and he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall live secure. For now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be the one of peace. And Micah 6:6-8. With what shall I come before the Lord, and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with tens of thousands of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?
Preparation for Advent, we were asked to share today about some of the ways that our family celebrates the season of Advent, Christmas, and Epiphany. Before we get into that, I want to put up an image that we're going to tie to the presentation today in some way. And Sandy and I have worked out a secret code for when she's supposed to advance the slide. It goes like this. Sandy, please advance the slide. So, can I get some? What is this? Cow, thank you. What kind of cow? Brown, cute, good. Not what I'm looking for. Anything else? Another cute bull, milk. No. Sandy, please advance the slide. Holy cow, what? Also not what I'm going for. Little. Come on. Was it? Sink cow? Saint cow. No, close. Starts with that letter. Sacred cow. That's right. Sacred cow. I put that up there to suggest that Christmas and all of its stuff is a bit of a sacred cow. It's a holiday that draws a lot of emotion, energy, anxiety, significance, pain, hurt, and joy. And so I want you to be aware of that as we're talking. Our family's tradition is fairly different than what we've grown up with, and I suspect with what some of you might still practice. And so I just want to say this has been our experience. It's just our experience, and we don't want to go down a path where people are going to feel Sandy advanced the slide. Judged. So this is a safe space for us this morning. At least that's the goal. Sandy advanced the slide. Alright, if you want to pick a second and just ask for some volunteers, what did Christmas mean to you as a child? What are your memories? And I got presents. Community. That's it. Chicken? Wonderful. What? That's what I think of too. Racing demons. I want to go to Christmas at your house. Anything else needed? Okay, that'll do. Sandy, advance the slide. So these are some things that I wanted to put up when I was thinking about this. I always love winter, still do, and it's even better in Wisconsin than it is here. It's ridiculously beautiful. Walks in the woods, playing outside, sledding, wrestling, hot cocoa by the fire, Sandy advanced the slide. Going to church, remembering the birth of Christ with my church family, singing Christmas songs, and remembering how grateful we are for Christ coming as a human to show us the way to life. Presents, I remember sitting with my family on Christmas Eve, trying so hard to maintain my composure while we were reading the Bible story, because I knew as soon as we were done reading the Bible story, we could open the presents. And my dad would make me read it sometimes, and that was just torture. Sandy, advance the slide, please. All manner of fun, joyful, hilarious, touching, quality films. Sandy, advance the slide. Band concerts and choir concerts. This is not actually a photo from my childhood, but I could be the boy on the far left there with the longish hair playing the trumpet on the second chair. Advance the slide, please, Sandy. And now, let's take a second and just think about how that might have changed for us now that we're adults. What does Christmas mean now? Is it different? Is it the same? I'd like some volunteers. I think for a whole lot of people, this is a huge part of it. For myself, my company has a holiday party that I'm supposed to go to. And then I'm supposed to have a holiday party for my tenants or a building manager. So I need to do that. And then I get invited to some other people's parties.
And then if I was like most folks, I'd be planning a trip to see my family on top of it all. And I'd be scouring Amazon for gifts that look interesting enough to give to my relatives. I'd be wondering if I've sold out yet or how close I can get to the edge without really selling out in all of this. Maybe I'd be going to see family that I'm not interested in seeing. They fight, they don't get along, and the emotionally highly charged holiday of Christmas only adds fuel to the fire. So the more Annie and I thought through this seasonal observance, what we wanted to build for our family, if you don't know us well, our youngest, our oldest son is 10 now, the harder it got to connect all that other stuff with this. What did the presents, lights, parties, band concerts, family trips, and everything have to do with the incarnation? Not that these things were wrong in and of themselves, but that they could indeed become gods themselves. I've been convinced that the single most influential factor in our Christmas routine was nostalgia and sentimentality. The desire to revisit a event that would bring back happy memories of us creating art. The hot cocoa and the warm nights around the fire, and certainly the long list of Santa Claus were idols of heaven itself. None of the rest of us would be happy if not for the incarnation. But it was the incarnation that seems so hard to dwell on. And so we set out in conversation with a number of other Christians to build a Christmas that we could better believe in. Same way, thanks to Sam. And to the Lord's end.
So around that time, a friend of ours introduced us to a really helpful book called All Year Round. And it helped us to kind of create a framework to think about how we celebrate holidays more broadly throughout the year. The book offers an approach to celebrating the seasons of the Christian calendar, the seasons of the year that integrates both the Christian festivals as well as the natural shifts in the seasons outdoors. It places a high value on symbols and on celebration, on creating rituals that are accessible and interesting for adults and for children. We knew that we didn't want to kind of do these scrooges that forbade all the fun things on principle. We wanted to create something that would be joyful and mysterious and celebratory, and something that we would look forward to and want to invite others into. We really didn't want to be sort of just killjoys in our virtuous dance against the tainted culture, and this book gave us these sort of four principles to build that around. So these organizing principles of beauty, wonder, anticipation, and reverence have been really helpful values to try and orient ourselves around and inculcate in our children around Advent, Christmas, and the interest through the rest of the year as well. So if what we're working toward ultimately is a season of remembrance of the great mystery, making her being known in the body and life of a human being, Jesus of Nazareth, that would seem to be a pretty momentous event around which we should have a season of preparation, and that exists, and we know that that month is Advent. It's a month of waiting, of longing, of perhaps even grieving, this thing that we desire, this shalom, this wholeness in Christ is not yet here, but we wait in anticipation that it's coming.
So an Advent that honors this sort of thing is really different than the Advent of my childhood. And this was and is one of the hardest things for me to let go of. The season feels empty to me. Advent, as a child, for me, was a minor detail. It barely remarked. My family and everyone we knew would throw the tree up the day after Thanksgiving and start partying. All December was a month of lights, food, shopping, Christmas movies, Christmas music. Looking over JCPenney or Sears catalogs, scanning for the gifts that I wanted to ask for. A few days after Christmas, we'd take down the tree and move on with our lives. That sort of advent had everything to do with retailers getting us to buy stuff so they could end the year in the black. And it was antithetical to a sense of building anticipation towards the miracle of the Incarnation.
The true observance of Advent fits in tension with that sort of practice, that sort of month-long Christmas that starts at Thanksgiving and ends December 26th. At an earlier time in the church, Advent would have felt a lot more like Lent, waiting, being together, but not celebrating, because the honored guest of the celebration is not here yet. So our practice now is to slowly build toward Christmas throughout the month of Advent, creating an atmosphere of longing, of hope, anticipation. There's that word that keeps coming back. Slowly, slowly decorating our house with a few things, slowly bringing in elements of light and beauty along the way. At the center of this is our Advent calendar made of jars for each day leading up to Christmas. So in each jar is a note or a small item. Some of them have a few lines from the story of Jesus' birth from the book of Luke, and then on those days there's a sort of tiny ornament that's related to that part of the story, and we hang it on a little twig tree that we make and is in our living room. And the twig tree is, I wish I should have included a picture, but I forgot. It's not a beautiful Christmas tree. People are very confused by this when they see it in our house, because it is a very barren and kind of strange-looking thing. We just make it out of sticks from our cottonwood in our front yard. But I think it's, again, supposed to be different. It's supposed to point out that it's not this full and lush item of beautiful centerpiece, but it really kind of reflects a deadness, an emptiness of waiting, a longing. So anyway, those little ornaments go on it throughout and build throughout the course of Advent. The jar might also have instructions for, like, an activity that incorporates an appreciation of winter, like making paper snowflakes that we then would hang around the house, or gingerbread cookies that are shaped like little animals that are also waiting for the Christ child. And sometimes it's good to have down days, so a few of them will just have silly holiday things like the races and whatever. Because you can't do something every night. Life is still life. In the last week or two of Advent, we start bringing out one by one pieces of the nativity scene, and the nativity slowly fills the table as Christmas approaches. On Christmas Eve, the last piece comes out, the manger that then is set to welcome the baby. And on Christmas morning, we rush to find him lying there. When our kids were especially small, this was amazing. Hey there! These two pieces, the calendar and the nativity, have become the centerpiece in our house during Advent. They draw the focus around these symbols of anticipation. The kids are drawn to them to see what's happening each day. There are several saints' days that could be observed during Advent, and we've chosen a couple of those to integrate into our observation of Advent. The first is St. Nicholas Day on December 6th, and we read a well-crafted children's book, the historical St. Nicholas. It's really great. You guys can read it if you're interested. Who was a 3rd century bishop who was devoted to the poor, and so we do the sort of traditional European tradition where you set out your shoes on December 6th, and the legend is that Nicholas comes around on his horse, and the horse is being saved, and then he sees the oranges that are related to him, like he's involved in the legend anyway. And then the other one that we do is Santa Lucia Day. It's a Scandinavian tradition that honors the Italian martyr Lucia, who was believed to have brought food to Sweden during a time of famine. And she was later killed for her faith. And there's a lot of theories about why this Italian martyr became so enthusiastically celebrated in Scandinavia. I won't bore you with all that now. But suffice it to say that she's a solstice figure who brings light into a dark time, both literally and terms of the winter months and metaphorically in terms of our season of Advent. And that combination of a female hero of the faith and our Northern European heritage makes that compelling for our family. So there's costumes and a special song to sing and special fun that we bake that day. Look at that little Lucia. So on the last days of Advent, on or around December 21st, we wake up very early, we pack thermoses of coffee and hot cocoa, and we go down to the lake to await the sun's return after the longest night of the year. It's often clouded over, which is sad, but a few years we have seen the sun come up over the horizon of the lake, and it is a truly dramatic reminder of the light breaking back into our cold, dark world.
I'll see that. Those are shots of frequency here, from my perspective. Worshiping the living water has been a blessing during Advent. And on Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve is a production, as you all know, involving humor, drama, art, children, and adults. Even when it's been a near disaster, many of you will remember the year that the costumes almost all caught on fire right over here. I certainly do. I wonder if it was Lisa or who, like somebody ran up and started blowing candles up. Candles are awesome. Even when it's been a near disaster, it's been memorable, and we have cherished it. We're glad to have this church as a home base to help launch our Christmas celebration. For us, the party really begins Christmas Eve. We break out the decorations, spring up the lights around the room, we hang ornaments from our bare lilac tree in the front yard, play Christmas music in the house for the first time, and we set the tone for the next 12 days, and then head over to the meeting house to kick it off. After the Christmas service, we get together with friends and read stories together late into the night. On warmer nights, perhaps even do this outside around the fire. Slide, please. One thing we don't put up on Christmas Eve, but the rest of our decorations, is a tree. And much like Advent, I still feel conflicted about this. As I said before, I love trees. We had a tree our first year of marriage before our son was born. But upon reflection, we realize that we're paying someone 200 miles away to grow a little tree on his lot in Wisconsin, cut it down, drive it to Chicago, sell it to us in a parking lot off the back of his truck, so we can look at it for a month and then throw it away. The plastic alternatives seem equally bizarre. We were inspired by our neighbors Tim and Patty, who had built a largish manger out of driftwood found on the beach. It's beautiful, and it draws the eye. It's a true centerpiece in the room. So we knew that other creative centerpieces, other creative possibilities could be thought of. Additionally, whatever its origins, the Christmas tree in America is the castle around which a moat of presents is typically arrayed. And we were concerned that the tree, without such a moat beneath it, would draw too much attention to the absence of the presents. Because we also decided very early on that presents would not be a part of our family's observance of Christmas. On a personal level, this was easy. We felt confident in our attempt at anti-consumerism, disgusted with the profit-hungry hijacking of the season. Thank you for that exclamation mark. It was not sad to kiss goodbye the stress of shopping. The hard part was negotiating with our families of origin, especially mine. My parents had a near overwhelming desire to give their grandchildren gifts, and we have had numerous difficult conversations with them to bring them to the point of unenthusiastic acceptance. One of our strategies was to encourage them to direct all that energy towards the kids' birthdays,
And that's been a useful idea that we've used to talk about with our own kids as well. Christmas honors and remembers Christ. Your birthday honors and remembers you. And that is the occasion when you receive gifts. Admittedly, playing hugely in our favor is the fact that both our families, Annie and I's, live far away. Annie's from Phoenix. My parents are in Minneapolis. Which gives us a huge advantage in shaping Advent and Christmas without the pressure of traditions from our birth families. Which is not all bad. Many of you who see your parents and siblings regularly benefit from the strength of those connections, I'm sure. But I think also would find the inertia of your extended family's holiday traditions a much stronger force in your lives than any I have experienced. Rejecting presents is what really energized us to work on this whole Advent Christmas project, because we knew we'd have to build something exciting, mysterious, and beautiful as an alternative that would absorb our children's attention. We admit this has gotten more challenging as our kids have gotten older, but the challenge has been well worth it. We've actually found an ally in the diverse schools that they have attended here in Rogers Park. Many of my kids' classmates are Muslim, Jewish, or Hindu, and they may or may not have any Christmas observances. This has helped us create a narrative for our kids that everyone celebrates these things differently, and they may or may not have the same holidays. This goes a long way. If we lived in a context where there was more homogenous Christmas enthusiasm, I think that the sense of isolation and difference would be more pronounced for my kids. We do wake up to special fruits, nuts, and chocolates on Christmas morning, however, to kick off the day. Sandy's life.
On Christmas Day, we co-host a brunch. We invite folks who happen to be around, don't have family to see that day. We eat, we talk, we play games into the afternoon. After a short nap, we reconvene, we watch a movie. It's been a wonderful way to pass Christmas Day over the years. But it doesn't stop there. Knowing that if we were going to eliminate some of the big pieces of cultural Christmas, we would need to create a compelling alternative for our kids. We return to the tradition of celebrating Christmas as the 12-day festival of Christmastide, ending with the apex of Epiphany. We have a wreath that hangs over the dining room table, and each star has a little pocket with a picture that represents that day's celebration. The 12 days really don't have anything to do with the Partridge and the Pear Tree song. And we've taken a lot of liberties and drawn on a lot of practices rooted both in Christian and nature traditions to create a number of ways to observe each of the 12 days. And so we kind of listed the names of the days that we do, and I won't go into all of them. But they range from really involved activities that take up the whole day to some of the days it's just a simple song or a story around the dinner table. We can change around the order of the days and substitute in new ideas as needed. So, for example, Boxing Day was traditionally the day in Britain where the aristocracy would give their servants boxes of gifts and let them now go celebrate the holiday with their families, because they did it on actual Christmas, which your servants can go do it now. And we amended this significantly when our kids were small. On Boxing Day, we would go trolling the alleys searching for a large appliance box that some other family discarded because they got a new fridge for Christmas. And we would lug it home, and we would cut it up and make a big house or a car or whatever out of it. One of the other days is the Feast of Holy Innocents, so the day where we remember how King Herod had all the Hebrew boys under the age of 2 slaughtered to get rid of any competition from the King of the Jews. So we use that day to think about contemporary situations of conflict that are impacting the lives of children around the world. Because really, I mean, Christmas isn't all happy and clean and warm, right? But Jesus came because why? Right? Because we're a big mess. And that felt like that's part of our calendar as Christians, and that's part of, I think, honoring that for ourselves, like integrating that into our remembrance and integrating that into our care, understanding of why we do any of it, I guess. So in general, we take the 12 days as a time to break bread with people we don't normally spend time with. We share an evening together, inviting others into our celebrations. Sometimes that's it for the scavenger hunt that we do around the neighborhood, where we'll have like different ingredients for making hot cocoa hidden in different places around this area. And it's sort of patterned on the traditional New Year's Day fox hunt. So scavenger hunt instead. And usually we'll try to invite a family we don't know well into that with us. So all these things are rooted in a variety of traditions. We choose the ones that fit for us, make them meaningful. Developing these alternative traditions to the usual American holiday make it full, make it engaging. We sometimes feel like we have to explain that we don't actually sit around frowning our disapproval all Christmas time. We have what's actually an extended celebration of being together, being with others. And we believe that's a fitting observance of God coming to be with us. And the 12 days draws to a close with a ruckus celebration of Epiphany on January 6th. This is the day of the revealing of Christ's glory. This is about as big a production as Christmas Day for us, even if it's a little bit shorter of a party. But we do have a party, a dinner party, and we ask that the people invited bring foods that have something hidden in them that are then revealed. And we have a liturgy and a short musical theater production of the Three Kings play involving everyone who's there, which is also amazing. There's a small plastic baby Jesus that's baked into the cake. Whoever finds the baby is the king or queen for the night, and then that person has to make the cake for the next year. It's a joyful night. It's a wonderful way to end the season. The next day is Plow Monday. We take down all our decorations, save for a few candles that remind us of Christ's glory continuing to be revealed in our dark wintry world. We go back to work. We go back to school. We go back to the plow.
So you can just dwell on that picture for a minute. We'll get there. I want to take a minute and revisit some of the challenges. This didn't happen all at once for us. Little by little, over the last dozen years, we've added and adjusted. By starting small, this was not nearly so overwhelming as it might look, to create an alternative. Also, as we've said, Annie's entire family is in Arizona, mine is in Minnesota, and in each of our family systems, she and I are the siblings with more comfort in making decisions that our families won't understand and might be taken as alienating. We made the decision years ago to stay in Chicago for Christmas so that we could celebrate with our church family and build the sort of holiday that we wanted. We felt sure that the inertia of the sentimental consumer Christmas that our families practice would be irresistible if we celebrated with them. And our kids would have confusion as to why Grandma and Grandpa would sit around talking about how they wished they could give them presents. And watching everyone else pass Christmas presents while we sat out. So we made a hard choice. In fact, this year, in December, will be the first time in 10 years that we have seen extended family around the Christmas holiday. Even though we see both our families regularly, we have good relationships with them. We see them at other times during the year. Still, this was a hurtful decision. But we felt strongly enough about wanting to set a new tone for our own kids that it was worth it. In addition to family pushback, you can count on it from the culture. As I was explaining our Christmas to an old boss of mine, she helpfully thought to recount a story to me of some children that killed themselves on Christmas when they didn't get presents. In all seriousness, no lie. I never Googled it, but she felt she needed to add that. Additionally, my dad sent this gem to me 2 years ago. Sandy, please advance the slide. Does anybody remember Kirk Cameron? If you're too young for that, he was the star of a TV show called Growing Pains. And he's since become a Christian media producer of sorts. Other hit movies. Hopefully there's sound.
Do you ever feel like Christmas has been hijacked?
Hey, where's Christian? How's he doing? Is he okay?
Oh, he's fine, really. He's just not into Christmas this year, that's all.
By all the commercialism and those who want to replace Merry Christmas with Happy Holidays or Season's Greetings, whatever that means.
You okay?
This is not what Christmas is all about.
Some want to pull down every manger scene and tell us why our favorite Christmas traditions are wrong.
Newsflash, not in the Bible. That's a pagan idol symbol. It was the winter solstice. Jesus was not born in December.
It's exactly what the Druids did.
It's like a carjacking, but like of our religion. And guess what? Santa got in the car, kicked Jesus out, and was like, rolling, and took it.
Isn't it time somebody spoke up? Everything you see inside there, it's all about Christmas. It's all about Jesus. I know you love Christmas, and you want it to be all about what it's all about. This Christmas, dive headfirst into all of the joy, the dancing, the celebration, the feasting, the imagination, and traditions that glorify the true reason for the season. Join me and my family, and together, let's put Christ back into Christmas.
I think that says it all. So, in this film, I did watch the whole film because I love my dad. And I wanted to be able to talk to my dad about this film. He's so happily recommended to me. In this film, the main character is having a giant party at his giant house. And he decides to go sit in his giant SUV in the driveway and, like, sit it out. And Kirk Cameron's character comes out and says, "What's wrong?" And he starts going through the list that you kind of heard him go through. The setup to me was a little bit hopeful at the beginning. I was thinking, yeah, those are good questions. That's right. Okay. You know? At some point, Kirk cuts him off, and he starts addressing his concerns, and in a series of 3 to 5 minute monologues, has solved the whole thing. And after the most memorable one was when he's talking about the presents, and he says, you need to picture them as, like, the presents, the outline of the walls of the New Jerusalem, built around the cross of Christ, which is the tree in the middle. Literally building the kingdom out of our Christmas junk. And at the end of each monologue, there's, like, maybe 3 or 4 of them, at the end of each one, Christian, the main character, they're in the car, he does this. Thought of it that way before. It's just the worst impulses of Christian media, in my opinion. It's not all bad. I'm not going to say that, but You know, it's like, here's this straw, totally lame argument, and we're just going to knock it down with a 2-minute explanation. So anyway, the point of all this is that some group of Christians thought it was worth their time and money to produce a feature-length film that says, don't mess with our Santa Claus, don't mess with our tree, don't mess with our presents, don't mess with our holiday. I think that speaks a lot to me. Slide, please. Closing thoughts. We all feel some expectations around Christmas. The kind of things we should do, the experience we want to give our kids or each other. We have complex relationships within our families that drive our decisions and routines. Still, I'm confident that there are some life-giving adjustments that we can make, no matter what our situations are. We're a church of unusual people. We know anytime you push back against the wider culture, there's going to be some tension, there's going to be awkward moments, and there's going to be some difficulty. That's a given, but it doesn't have to be exhausting every step of the way. What's possible? What's manageable? What could you gladly do without? What could you replace it with? And what would bring you some joy? That concludes our presentation. Thank you.